You're listening to Healthcare Now Radio. Stand by for This Just In, the latest in healthcare innovation and technology trends with your HIT advisor, Justin Barnes.
Thank you, everybody, and tuning back into us. And I certainly want to thank everybody from Business Radio X who's producing this live HIMSS 19 segment of This Just In Radio Show. I'm your host, Justin Barnes. Devin, no, you're here. We actually have plenty of time.
All right.
So actually, I don't think my next guest is a break. So that's good. They give me one break in 5 hours of broadcasting. I get one chance to run to the restroom and back.
Oh, my God.
It's very tough. The older you get, the harder the people work you. You know, it's brutal. So how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I think this might be my, 10th HIMSS conference.
It's my 18th.
You're 18th.
It's crazy.
Wow. All right, you win a prize.
No. This is people 25 years deep in this here. But anyhow, I want to know about Citizen, because we got a couple extra seconds. We'll get into the thought leader questions, but I've known you for a long time. You're wonderful in the privacy and security world.
Thank you.
A true thought leader.
Thank you.
But I want to hear about Citizen really quick.
Yeah, so Citizen is a platform that individuals can use in order to gather and manage and then share their health information. So it's really been exciting to hear what's been said by some of the folks in government about emphasizing the right of individuals to access their information, because we want to help them do that. And we want to also make sure that they get data that's not just a digital shoebox, but data that is normalized and standardized and summarized in ways that they can then send on in order to help their own care and maybe help people like them. We're actually focusing on very sick patients, so the kind of data that they need, x-rays, pathology reports, in addition to meds and labs, is the type of data that today is really hard to just get out of a portal, or it won't even be available through APIs until, you know, many years from now when we increase the amount of data that's available through those standards-based APIs. So we go the old-fashioned way.
Yep.
We knock on health information management department doors and we say, hey, HIPAA right of access, patient gets this, we take it in, we pull all of the relevant data out of it, and we give back to our users something that is then their story about their illness. And we're starting with cancer. I don't know if I mentioned that. And they can go seek nth opinions. They can see if they're eligible for clinical trials. They can donate to their favorite type of research, share information with a caregiver. Like, it's just really putting into their hands the power to both direct their own care and to help other people.
I love it. Wow.
Thank you.
I didn't realize. I actually didn't realize that. I knew you were focused on cancer, but I didn't understand how deep.
Yeah.
So how do you get to that population? How do you find those patients, those individuals? Do you start off with health systems or?
Yeah, we're actually starting, we have multiple pathways through which we find our users, and we're still pretty early going. We don't have that many users by design because we, what we're building is actually a hard thing to do from a technical standpoint.
Yeah.
Who knew? Healthcare is hard, right?
Exactly. Very.
But
it's also very complex.
It's also very, right, that too.
Yes.
We are going to get users both through relationships with healthcare systems, where the oncologists say, hey, if I had this data on all of my patients, that would really truly be worthwhile. And then also through patient advocacy organizations. So there's lots of them out there who try to help
people. Did you used to help lead one of those? Weren't you in the leadership team?
I did. Yeah. Not one focused on cancer, but National Partnership for Women and Families has a lot of individuals who follow them, who they can reach out to. Mm-hmm. And, so working through advocacy groups who are often a very trusted source of information for patients is yet another way to say, hey, here's a service that you might want to use. They don't necessarily have to endorse us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really my job as the privacy official in the company to make sure that we have a really good product to sell in terms of people trusting us with their data. We won't sell it or share it unless the consumer has consented.
So awesome.
Thank you.
So now diving into some of the reasons you're here at HIMSS and so forth, what are the trends that you're seeing out there, either healthcare trends or health IT trends that you're excited about?
Yeah, I mean, and this is a bit of a biased answer, but it won't be surprising. Like, I think the whole trend toward empowering consumers or patients data is spot on. I mean, you're a parent, right?
Yeah.
Like getting information on your kids.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a.
I only work with doctors who are highly interoperable, to be honest.
Good for you.
Yeah, I'm
getting there too. I had a doctor for many years that I really liked who was not. And I finally was like, as I get older and my health concerns get more serious, I need to know that my information can go to where it needs to go quickly and that I can get it quickly and organize it. Same thing with, I mean, I have adult parents who, increasingly they're in decent health, but it's not great health. And every year there's something new. Right.
Yes.
So I think it's really important for people to be on top of their health, and you can't do that without data. So that's really the trend that I am most excited about. I'm super excited about the rapid adoption of fire-based APIs. Right. Like for a long time we really struggled with how do we get this data moving, and to really see both the regulators but also the community of industry folks as well as people in the consumer-facing community to say, you know what, we can all get behind this, and it doesn't solve everything, but it solves enough, and we can iterate on it over time and improve it, but this is the direction we ought to be going
in. You sound like a niche. You just sat up here, and for 15, you sound just like you. It's so great. I love him. Love you. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I completely agree.
We're preaching the Bible of fire, right? I almost tweeted, Anish Chopra is on fire, F-H-I-R, and I was
like, that's good.
That is just too...
No, that would have been good.
A little too weird.
You mean from his talk this morning? From his... I heard he did a good job.
No, he was seriously... That opening session... was just to me so energizing. Not the gospel, the singers were great, but where I got really energized was having both the regulators and others on stage saying, you know what, this is the time. And I think it fits with the conference theme, right? Champions of health. You can't be a champion of health and hoard data.
That's right.
You cannot be a champion of health if you let your concerns about where's this data going and I mean, at some point, you just have to say those become excuses.
Correct.
And you just gotta push.
Yep.
Push.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
So, what are two or three best practices that you can offer my audience on how to navigate access to data, access to information, and what you're just speaking about?
Yeah. Well, from whose perspective?
The consumer perspective.
From a consumer perspective,
probably more knowledge of anybody else on some of these topics.
Yeah. So one best practice would be. Don't hesitate to stand up for yourself, because if someone is telling you it's data that you cannot have, the chances are pretty good that they are wrong.
Right.
And sometimes they don't intend to be wrong. I think sometimes just the information about what people have a right to is still sort of trickling out, even though this has been around for 20 years.
Exactly,
this is nothing new, but it didn't get a lot of emphasis, so I'll give people a little bit of a pass.
1996, we started this?
Yes. Yeah. Well, the regs didn't come out till 1999.
Okay.
So...
Yeah. That's right. You're right.
But still, it's a long time.
Yeah.
It's 20 years.
Correct.
Now.
Yes.
Like, it's time.
Very true.
But you're probably not being told what's accurate. So, go to OCR's website. Go to consumer groups like
Office
the National
Civil
Partnership.
Rights, OCR.
Office for Civil Rights. Yes.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
We have stuff on our website, webpage, citizen.com, as resources for people. Like, if you're being told you can't get your x-rays, that's wrong. If you're being told you can't get your records, that's wrong. If you're being told you have to come in person to get your records, that is also wrong.
Love it.
Like, all the ways that they're making it hard for you, wrong.
Yep.
So that is like and then from that point, once you have the data, like, it really is going to be incumbent on you to put it in a safe place.
Yep.
Which means that if you want to use a consumer facing app or a service like ours, you're actually going to have to read the privacy policy.
Yes.
Because those entities are all outside of HIPAA, including us.
Yep.
And that means that the protections for your data are all sort of put in this set of policies that you really have to read, because once you click on that thing that says, yes, I want to do this, you are in. You basically consented to everything that they've said in these sometimes hard to read
disclosures,
terms of service and privacy policies, but you kind of have to do that. And I do think that there's going to be more resources available to consumers to help them navigate that space now that we're opening up the doors to the data in that direction. So don't take no for an answer. Do your homework. And put your data in terms of putting your data in the safe place.
Fantastic. What do you think about the new rule coming out? It came out yesterday.
Yeah, I might be the only person at this conference who hasn't even skimmed it yet.
But you like the concept of it.
Yeah, the concept of it, information blocking was really a revelatory provision in the 21st Century Cures Act, and it scared the crap out of a lot of entities who could be subject to information blocking penalties.
Yep.
And it was, you know, a joyous occasion for folks who sort of felt like the data that they needed to move around was just sort of jammed up in lots of ways that, you know, that didn't really make a lot of sense. They weren't technical obstacles. They were business obstacles. They were, you know, regulatory misinformation types of obstacles. So I think we're going to get clearance on all of that and be able to get through some of the sludge.
Yep.
And then if there are remaining technical issues to be resolved, we'll have a better idea of where they are, because they won't be sort of shrouded behind essentially business concerns.
I completely agree.
So,
excellent.
So I'm pretty excited to dig into it, actually. Yep. That's the nerdy side of me. Like, oh, this is great, but I want to go home and read regs.
Right. I know. I was actually fortunate. So I have Elise Sweeney Anthony on my show at 3:50 today.
Nice.
Talking about the new rule. But Peter, who in communications at ONC, sent me the infographic, which is what I was thankful for, because I didn't have time to read the reg. Actually, I was preparing for this show, but I did read the infographic, and I do like it. The only thing I'm concerned about is they mentioned if it's too much of a burden to share the information, and there's going to be you can get basically dispensation for not sharing based on it being too much of a burden. I just don't want that being levied.
No, I think they need to provide a lot more detail on what is meant by a burden.
Because,
you know, everything that takes work is a burden.
Yes,
arguably,
correct.
Right?
And that's what I'm worried
about. I have
to
do something different from what I did before.
That's a burden, right?
That's a burden.
Yeah.
Right?
And,
you know, look, the reality is that when you're changing workflows within a healthcare institution, it kind of feels like moving the Titanic, right? But that can't be the litmus test,
correct.
Right?
That's right.
You know, you have to change. If there are other things that make it too much of a burden, you got to specify what that is. And frankly, ONC needs to provide more detail, but we need to help them actually.
Correct.
As part of this comment period.
Very true.
What does it mean to be too much of a burden, and what should be off the list?
Yes.
As being too much of a burden.
Excellent point. So my last question: we spent a lot of time looking at here and now at HIMSS, in 2019, 2020. What about 3 years from now? What do you think we need to be thinking about, or looking towards, or looking forward to, or need to navigate potentially in 2022?
I actually think that there are going to be a lot more companies at this conference that never were at this conference before, that never thought about coming to this conference, because we've opened up the aperture around data,
right.
And we
That's
have
excellent
opened
point.
The door to excellent. A lot of companies who are going to see amazing opportunities in the space, right? This is what percent of GDP is healthcare now? Like 19, 20?
Yeah.
Okay. It was 16 when I was in public
Correct.
Health school in 1993.
Right.
So,
I know.
So it's moving up, obviously. Yeah. And you know, that's going to, again, we're already seeing large companies like Amazon and others who were not in the healthcare space previously
starting to fly
in very deeply. Yeah. But I think it's going to be a whole host of companies are going to think about the solutions that they've provided in other industries and say, you know what? We are at the data is flowing better. We actually have some opportunities here to bring some of what we did to transform another industry into healthcare to make it better. So I think there will be this exhibit floor will start to look increasingly like the Consumer Electronics Show, right?
In Vegas, the CES show.
It edges closer and closer there every year, and maybe right in time for us to have HIMSS back in Vegas.
Exactly.
Which now that I live on the West Coast, I'm like,
oh,
I'm
you
ready
left
for.
DC?
Yeah,
really?
I live in Silicon Valley. I followed the company.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
No, thank you. But it makes getting to Orlando a little more challenging.
It does. I actually lived in Palo Alto, 836 Forest Avenue, two streets off of University.
I know exactly where Forest is.
Yeah.
I had a work assignment in Palo Alto in 1997. I was at 555 Forest Avenue. We were practically
in
neighbors.
1997? I was there in 1998, 99.
Yeah, I was gone by then.
Oh,
that's so funny.
Gracious,
I should could have left a breadcrumb trail for you.
Hilarious. That's awesome. I didn't realize you moved to the West Coast. Wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yes, yeah.
How long have you been with Citizen then?
We have been a company since November 6. Well, incorporated in September 2017, but we had our first day November 6th, 2017, and I was there. I had moved just like 2 days before that.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Dev McGraw, thank you very much for joining us today.
Justin, thank you for the invite.
We'll do it again. Thank you so much. Yeah, I want to have you back in my radio show later on in the year to get an update on what you guys are doing.
I'd love to do it.
Cool.
Thank you.
Awesome. Welcome back, and thank you very much. I have one final guest here at HIMSS 19, Ligia Ricciardi. from Chief Transformation Officer from Carium. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Justin.
This is your first time on the show. I'm very excited to have you. And since I don't know Carium very well, I would love you to spend a minute or 90 seconds or so. We just did a great countdown here, so now we're really versed on seconds. But 90 seconds or so on what Carium is and what you guys do.
It's a software company that builds a patient engagement platform. So we partner with existing health systems, community-based organizations, and others to provide an online experience or an app-based experience that guides patients through their health and wellness journey. So that's like prompts, like don't forget to follow through on that appointment with the specialist, but it's also kind of nudges and encouragement about getting more exercise or eating better, that kind of thing.
What type of innovations are you deploying in that platform? Are you using like voice? Are you using other types of what type of technology, texts, or what are you using for?
So I think a lot of these things we may expand into. We're under a year old. We were actually started last April, but we are up and running with the Petaluma Health Center and with other folks whom I can't yet announce. But right now, part of what we're doing that's really innovative is that we are using behavior change science to understand kind of what's motivating people and to tailor how we motivate them based on things that we know about them. So that's one thing that we're doing. And we're really trying to understand and get to know the person, not just like what's your health history, but things like how are you feeling today? How are you feeling yesterday? Is there a trend? You know, what's important to you? Those kinds of questions. The idea being that, you know, technology, part of what's really cool is that technology can really bring us personalization at scale.
Very true. And you have deep consumerism roots. So say, give me 30 seconds from your ONC post and what you did there. Because you did great work.
Sure. There. Thank you. So I went to ONC in the midst of implementation of the High Tech Act. And I was 2011, actually.
2011, okay,
I was already super passionate about empowering consumers and patients. And I went there with that in mind. And I would say it was sort of a, it was something that the agency had thought of. But while I was there, I really worked hard to expand it and to collaborate with partners both within ONC and a lot in the outside community too to say this consumer thing, this isn't just like a small add-on, this is a really, really major part of how we're going to transform healthcare.
Was Farzad the coordinator then, or who was the coordinator then?
I actually was there with three different coordinators, Blumenthal briefly, and Farzad during the whole of his tenure as national coordinator, although he was part of the
and then
team
Jacob,
that hired
right?
me. Jacob as well, yes, and Karen DeSalvo. So actually I got four.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
That's right. Very cool. And then also, did I see you outside? Do you have a cape on? Are you wearing a cape? Because Rasu was here earlier.
I may have a cape.
I think you have a cape on. You're the communicator?
That's supposed to be off the record. But
I love
it. I actually wanted to be the consumerista because I used to kind of be called that.
Yeah, exactly.
But that didn't exactly hit the, it's like we had to have a certain form of word. So they decided on communicator, which works okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
But I communicate a lot about consumer stuff.
And
it's
I
all
like
good, though.
Yeah, now I like consumerista. That's fantastic. Okay, so now let's talk into some of the thought leader stuff. What healthcare and health IT trends are you seeing or are you navigating out in the industry? Let me touch on a little bit.
So having come from ONC, I am pretty excited about the announcement yesterday by ONC and CMS.
Elise was here earlier.
You've already heard about it somewhat, but just for those who perhaps weren't listening, this is kind of furthering the idea of how dare them.
No.
This is furthering the idea of patient access to data, and in this case, using APIs to do it. That's really exciting, not only because it just generally makes it easier, but also because it enables a whole ecosystem of apps and tools, like the company I work at now, to be built around consumers.
Half my guests today are in that boat. They love APIs and the push here.
Well, this whole idea that nothing's going to change big picture in healthcare unless we have real sort of cross collaboration among different silos and different industries. And I love that we're increasingly seeing the healthcare industry work with tech and consumer-oriented tech, whether that's, you know, startups or big established companies.
Nope, that's fantastic. My first guest or my second guest was the niche. So you can't get away. You know, we started the show right off with APIs and we geeked out right on the.
Oh, I bet you did.
From get go. So perfect. I love it, though. What are two or three best practices that you can share with my guests around how to navigate these trends or get more involved in them?
So I will say this. If you think about one trend as further engaging consumers, which this rule or proposed set of rules is supporting, You have to really think about what's going to motivate your consumer or your customer. I think too often in healthcare, we think about healing the patient and what we think in a kind of paternalistic way often is best for them.
Yep.
But we have to kind of ask, literally ask people, why are you motivated? So if the issue is, hey, I need you to get in shape and like lose 10 pounds, maybe you're motivated because you want to go back to your high school reunion or you want to play with your grandkids or whatever it is. And if you sort of start with the motivation and then some of the specific goals, that's one best practice.
Excellent.
Like really think of your consumer first.
Yep.
I would say another one is to recognize that so much of health and wellness is influenced by not just what happens in the healthcare system, but all the things that happen outside. So not just, you know, increasingly people are talking about social determinants of health, socioeconomic factors that impact people's lives. That matters. Genomics matter. It's all these things. You know, actual healthcare impacts only about 10% of your overall picture of well-being. So think beyond, you know, what happens in the office, in the clinic. Think about people's kind of lifescape as they go about their days and bring healthcare to them.
Nope, that's fantastic. Thinking about, because we talk about a lot of here and now at HIMSS. But thinking about 3 years from now, in 2022, what should we keep our eye on to have to navigate them or to be able to, you know, successfully navigate to thrive?
So a lot of people are talking about artificial intelligence now. That's something we can't sort of escape.
94% of my guests today have talked about AI.
We don't even need to go back to that then.
Well, but in a really positive way. People, initially, they're snickering, not on air, but just in the last, it's a hype. No, it's actually not hype. It's actually being involved in care strategies, care planning. Now doctors want to be trained on it. So it's
cool. Part of what's going on is that we have this immense proliferation of data. And if you look at consumers' lives, as I was saying, and you try and sort of piece together the whole picture of what influences someone's health, a lot of that is things that are beyond the traditional health system, other kinds of data, like what I ate for lunch and all these, you know, my moods, whom I spoke to, all kinds of other details. And people can be overwhelmed by data. AI is one thing that can help you navigate, whether you're in the provider position or the patient perspective, like make sense of that. What are the trends that matter? What are the things that we can pull out of that that we really need to watch? So I think we need AI in order to kind of navigate the masses of data that we now have access
Agree
to.
Agree completely.
But it's also important to not sort of just kind of say like, oh, AI will fix everything.
Right. Yes.
I mean, what is
It'll solve
AI?
Healthcare.
Like that still depends on a lot of rules and algorithms that are ultimately written by people. We have to figure out what matters. And we have
That's
to figure out how to do it in ways that are relatively unbiased as well, which is a challenge. So there's a lot that we're learning, I think, as an industry to figure out how to make AI more actually intelligent.
Mm-hmm. That's very good. And then also, I think the other side of AI is artificial intelligence, but augmented intelligence. I think it's when you get in with the doctors and care providers, you know, they still are going to be the domain expert, but we can use it. They can augment what we do and so forth.
Can I just say, speaking about augmentation?
Yes.
So augmented reality is another thing that I think is going to be really interesting and coming down the pike in just a few years.
Yes.
I mean, already, if you've ever like played Pokemon Go or used a Snapchat filter, augmented reality is happening.
I have not done either of those, though.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, you're almost off, right?
Yes.
I'll show you. It's going to be fun.
Cool.
But so let's incorporate those things for healthcare.
Yep.
So as you're grocery shopping, why not say like, you know, have sort of like an overlay of like, you could mix up these Brussels sprouts with that olive oil and that garlic and you could put together a whatever as an example.
Yeah, that's great.
So you could do all kinds of things.
Well, I'm a big foodie, so I love that example.
All right. Awesome.
Yes. Perfect.
Well, apparently we both have had Italian grandmothers, so that makes sense.
Yes. And she did teach him how to cook, too. No, I agree completely. Actually, last year, a panel that we had in the radio show talked about augmented reality, and they gave several examples that are being done today around doing, they don't usually do cadavers anymore. They actually do a lot of their surgeries through augmented reality.
Yes.
And virtual reality.
Yes.
And so, you know.
Another thing, I don't know if people talked about this, but like venipuncture.
Mm-hmm.
So have you seen these things? It's like this scanner you can put over someone's arm, and you can sort of see in an augmented way where someone's blood vessels are and where all the veins are, and therefore your stick rate of success is significantly higher.
Yeah. Nope. I love it. And
so
I agree with
you. It's pretty cool.
It is. So in closing, what do you hope to achieve over the next couple days here? You're going to communicate a lot.
Yep.
With people.
Yep.
But what are you looking to achieve, or what are you looking forward to in the next couple of days?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm looking forward to and what I'm hoping to achieve actually is, you know, I've made this switch from working in policy. I spent a number of years consulting in my own private practice. Now I'm working with a tech company, mm-hmm. and I'm really interested in partnerships and unconventional partnerships. Mm-hmm. I think it's very interesting that we've got, you know, Uber and Lyft here talking about working with healthcare, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So people from sort of non-traditional combinations coming together, I'm interested in exploring some of those with my company mm-hmm. And
well,
also learning
about...
You
came to a grand slam place for that.
It's a good place for that. But also sort of seeing what other kinds of creative partnerships are percolating. Because I think, obviously not even the biggest, you know, like there was the Apple-Aetna merger announced just the other, you know, recently last week. And mm-hmm. not even the biggest, you know, tech company can like go at something alone anymore.
Right.
Certainly in healthcare, we've all got a partner. Yep. So that's where it gets interesting.
Well, let me give Lyft another plug. I actually had an unfortunate incident with Uber on Monday morning where they canceled my trip to the airport. And we Evelyn and Jamie brought up Lyft and the Lyft, actually Allscripts Lyft partnership. And just, I want to give Lyft another, and also they've helped sponsor him, so we'll give Lyft another plug.
That is pretty cool.
Because they're thinking innovatively and how to partner. But I think Uber will as well. I mean, actually, 4 years ago or 3 years ago, I was in Arizona for actually a college football game. And one of the drivers, our Uber driver, I always ask people questions when I travel and I get to learn about the community.
You learn a lot.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so I always talk to them. And I said, so how long have you been driving? He's like, well, I've only been driving for Uber for a couple of months, but I work for a hospital. And I'm like, well, what's the difference? Oh, I make 10 times what I make. Or no, 20 times. I make 20 times the amount of money working for the hospital than I do Uber. I'm like, why? Oh, because the exact same trip costs 20 times more working for a hospital.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm like, what's wrong with healthcare? And
well, so, you know that like a Uber's ride in like, that. You know, an ambulance costs what? 2,000 times as much or something
like
that.
Yeah, well, it's more than, it's like $100 a mile. Or I think it's like $500 a mile, something ridiculous like that. No, it's $100 a mile, I think it is, to ride an ambulance. But they're just driving a car.
So maybe one day we'll get crowd sharers, you know, like anyone can be an ambulance for a few hours.
Well, I think what it is I understand the complexity of the ambulance, but I don't understand. He gets paid.
Yeah.
20 times to be in the same Toyota Corolla to drive someone to a hospital, then drive someone in
Uber.
Is that
because
it's a healthcare desk?
Yeah.
We're an open book. We're an open checkbook. We all pay. This is ridiculous. And we start cutting that stuff out. And that's when I knew Uber's going to disrupt that model. Because even if they charge double, it's still less than 20 times.
Sure.
Is what the other companies are charging. These are private organizations that hire drivers at 20x what Uber is charging.
Presumably, though, maybe that person who's driving for healthcare had to go through some extra background checks or... I don't know, one does hope, but
yes.
I don't know.
Yeah. But anyhow, Ligia, true pleasure to have you on air today. I'm glad you could join the show, and I'd love to have you back. As you build your company, let me know. I'd love to have you on air. I love what you guys are doing. So
excellent.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Justin.
You got it.
Pleasure.
Thank you. Awesome. And for everyone listening, thank you for joining us today. And please tune in weekdays at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. As always, you can track me on Twitter at HIT Advisor and use the hashtag ThisJustIn so you can respond to your comments from the show. In addition, all my content's always posted on my website at justinbarnes.com. Thanks, everyone. Have a terrific week.